Running Wild with Christine, Sex, Success, and Other Slippery Rabbit Holes. Welcome to episode 81 with Sarah Trivett. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to have you on. This is going to be so fun. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm good. I had a full day at work. I work at a treatment center in the downtown east side, and yeah, I feel just ready to hop into this with you.
As if you didn't have enough emotional stuff to process throughout the day. Let's give you some more.
I definitely did some like screaming and like sounding in my car on the drive home to get myself like that energy out and get myself ready, but I'm ready.
Oh, that's such a good reminder. I every now and then I get this like memory of this thing that I posted years ago that was like, I think we should all go to a field and scream for like a long time. It's a very good method. So, Sarah, you're a somatic trauma therapist.
That's right. Yeah. And I focus mostly on women's sexuality.
Nice. So before people with all this. Sounds good. Before we get into that stuff and the current big things that you're up to, let's backtrack a little bit. Where are you from?
Well, I was born in Vancouver, actually, at St. Paul's Hospital, and I work just like a block away from there. But I spent a little bit of time, actually a large chunk of my childhood, living in England. Nice. And then moved back to Vancouver for high school, lived in Victoria for a bit, but I feel like mostly I'm from here, from Vancouver.
Nice. What did you go to Victoria for?
I went to university, so I went to UVic there and I did a social work degree.
Nice. And what brought you back to Vancouver? Was that always a plan?
No, like, I mean, I got pretty entrenched into my life in Victoria for a while there. Like, it was the first time I really had, like, community and, like, positive friends, and I liked the change of pace that the island had to offer. But I think eventually what pulled me back is just being, I was, like, 21, I was, like, wanting to party and, like, go out and go to shows, and that's what was happening more in Vancouver. So I ended up moving home just simply
for the 20s. Yeah. What was your bringing up like? Did you grow up in a like liberal household, or what's your background like?
Well, I wouldn't exactly say it was a liberal household. No, my parents got divorced when I was 4. And so I grew up primarily with a single mom, and she's from the UK. That's why we moved to England after their divorce. Mm-hmm. And she was, you know, just from another generation. She had me when she was 39, so she was basically 40 years older than me. And she was like an old-fashioned old person. And so she had, you know, this upbringing in a kind of military British family. So she could be bigoted, and she was, yeah, just a really like clenched tight, I probably remember in the past tense because she passed away, clenched tight person. And you know, she died of a stroke, and I always think it's because of all that time just like really like, if you could see me right now, you'd see me like, yeah. I'm clenching my and I'm clenching like all the muscles in my body, you know. She had she really did have high blood pressure. So I grew up with her, and so we just battled it out for most of our entire relationship. And then when I was 21, she passed away. So actually, we never got to have that real reconciliation. I could see as I was getting a little bit older, like there was more peace between us, but we never fully healed our relationship. So I just kind of trust that in death, like, all is forgiven, and I can definitely appreciate you know, what she did for me now.
Yeah, it's a funny one, the relationship with mothers as daughters. So full of conflict regardless of how well you may or may not get along. And so is that, did you move back because of that conflict for university here, or was that sort of, for high school here, or was that unrelated?
So it was unrelated. And my mom, I think it was probably, so it wasn't quite high school that we moved back for. I think we moved back when I was 12, but I ended up going to a private school in West Van, which was actually a really horrible place. But my mom, just because of her values, she thought that it would be like a better education, and it'd be like air quotes, like better people for me to associate with. And so mostly it was because she lost her job in the UK. And actually, she really struggled. I was a kid, so I didn't really realize. Living in England, there's just a lower standard of living there. Things are expensive, wages are lower, and she was a secretary by trade, and so I think it was just harder for her to get by there. And so I think she moved to the UK because she was hurt and overwhelmed, like during her divorce. But then I think once that kind of settled, she realized actually there was a better life for us in Vancouver, so we moved back.
Nice. And then what was your, did you have a relationship with your dad?
Yeah, we still do. Like, I never lived with him, and so we're never super, super close. But there was a custody battle when I was 4, and so it ended up being that I flew out to see him in Canada for a month every summer for the whole time that I was living in England. And now our relationship, is I definitely, there's some resentments there and just like icky parts of our relationship, but I am doing my best to continually like reach out to him, and I spend Christmas with his sister and him, so
Nice.
we see each other from time to time.
The reason why I ask is because I always find it interesting when I speak with people whose jobs or passions revolve or tie into sexuality. I always find it interesting to talk about how it may or may not be made more difficult by your family setting.
100%. And it's interesting with trauma or like developmental trauma, the kind that we get growing up, is at least in my experience, like I didn't realize that I had it. It took being a lot older to be like, oh, like I had a traumatic upbringing. There was violence in my home. There was neglect and emotional abuse. And if you had asked me probably up until 3 years ago, I would have told you like I had a pretty idyllic childhood. And yeah, I think that's the thing about trauma, is it's really insidious, and so we don't realize that we have it, and so we just blame ourselves and think that we're broken or there's something wrong with us.
Yeah, I think that's totally right. And it's true. I think if you speak with anyone who hasn't really looked inward into their life and emotional health and mental health and in general, just any kind of self-work, it's like pretty common to just assume that your childhood is the childhood that people have and not second guess or question some of the bad stuff that could come from just whatever childhood you did have.
And the human mind is also very good at repressing like memories that are really painful and are difficult. And so there's things that happened in my childhood, like experiences of being hurt and hit, that I didn't remember until much recently. And in fact, working with plant medicine, it was like, it's funny. It was like I always knew that it happened, but I had also kind of simultaneously really forgot or didn't really see it as anything wrong that happened. Just as you're saying, actually.
It's crazy. And so when you, so you went for a Bachelor of Social Work, did you always aim at then veering into more therapy centric stuff, or did you really do something in social work to do that?
So I did my social work degree, and then I was a youth worker. And I think that's just because I was like 21 when I graduated, and the responsibility of working with adults just seemed really overwhelming. I didn't feel like an adult yet. So I thought, okay, I can work with youth. I'm like at least a little one step ahead of them. And so yeah, I worked at the Boys and Girls Club. I worked at a drop-in for homeless youth, and then I worked in residential foster care.
Whoa.
And then it was after that job, you know, that I felt, okay, like, I want more clinical skills, because you're having really difficult, hard conversations with the youth all the time. But I didn't feel like I was doing it in the most, like, skilled way. And so that's kind of what sent me back to counseling school, by which time I was older, and I thought, you know what, I'm more drawn to working with adults.
Yeah. How was going to counseling school? What was your experience during your master's, right?
Yeah. So I went to a school in Vancouver, and, you know, to be honest, like, I didn't think my counseling education was that great. Like, like, the most valuable part, of course, is, like, your second year, you start working with clients, and then that teaches you a lot. But in terms of, like, any real, like, theoretical background or anything, I think my school was just trying to give us a little bit of everything, but it was too much of a generalist approach, so I didn't feel that I was, like, grounded in any discipline when I started working with clients. And so I went and I did my first internship at ProChoices Community Therapy Clinic, which is in Vancouver, and it's actually a really amazing organization. So it's a grassroots feminist organization, and so the student therapists pay for their supervision and help support the rent on the clinic, and then the sessions are $20, sliding scale $20 to $40.
Yeah.
And I think, oh my gosh, it's been a little while. I can't remember. I think it might be free. I have to get back to you. $20 to $40 potentially. You could get free sessions there. And yeah, so it's just a really amazing place. And the therapists who go there, who are student therapists working with clients, also learn feminist narrative therapy through working there. And so it was great because I felt like, okay, I'm lacking really like a modality, an approach. And so ProChoices was amazing because it gave me my first immersion into an approach. Although I'm kind of later, I've decided, you know what, I'm not actually a narrative therapist.
Yeah.
It was at least good to have some kind of backing in something.
Yeah, I bet. And then how did you, after that, how did you steer yourself into where you are now?
So a lot of my healing has been through the body. And through a mind-body approach. When I was 18, I went to my first 10-day Vipassana retreat and was introduced to meditation. I wasn't able to start like a lifelong practice from those 10 days, but
yeah,
went off the cushion like, and had continued to do like for the rest of my life since I was 18. And also, you know, since I was in high school, I was really unathletic, like, hated PE, so as soon as you could do like an extracurricular for your PE credits, I went to yoga, and later on became a yoga teacher, and have done like yoga for my entire life. And so I was drawn to more of a body-based approach to healing because I knew that all the healing in my life had come from coming home to my body. And so while I don't think my master's degree was really that useful, at the same time as my master's degree, I started somatic experiencing training, which is a body-based way of processing trauma. And you don't have to be a therapist to do it. You can also be a body worker and be a somatic experiencing practitioner.
Yeah.
And so just doing that actually really felt like, okay, like it's, for me, it's the nervous system information and education and learning how to actually release and integrate trauma from the body that draws me a lot more than just talk therapy, which is only really working on, you know, like one level of your mind.
Yeah. And how did you have, I think it's an interesting shift in people's lives when you finish your formal education or your additional education within courses and coaching, and then you're at a point where it ends and then you have to start doing something. Was that gradual thanks to like doing, being a student therapist, or how did that feel for you?
Yeah, it was pretty integrated in the sense that I was a student therapist, and actually right around the same time that I started learning feminist narrative therapy, I got my first, you know, paying job working as a counselor, which I still work there actually at Salvation Army Harbor Light, which is in the downtown east side. And so it was definitely overwhelming starting to work there as a brand new therapist because, you know, the clients there have a ton of complex trauma. Like a lot of them were living outside, like had, you know, addictions to fentanyl and meth previously before coming to the program. And I was a brand new therapist. And so it was a little overwhelming. But yeah, it also made me find my footing really fast.
Yeah. What was the most overwhelming? The fact that you were taking on these people's stories, or the imposter syndrome potentially, or like what was it like?
Definitely imposter syndrome. I was like, well, who am I to work with this, and will I be taken seriously? And fear that I'm not good enough. So all of that for sure. And like just a real heartfelt desire to like help and to get it right, and wanting that so badly, and at times feeling like not skilled enough and holding space. Like it was, yeah, I look back, this was a few years ago now, like starting there, and I definitely feel that there's something interesting actually about the addictions treatment world.
Yeah.
Is that to be a drug and alcohol counselor, you need, for the most part, less education than to be a kind of what you would call like a clinical counselor.
Yeah.
And I'm both, but I was able to start, you know, as a brand new counselor, like just still working on my degree. And it's interesting that you need less education because, you know, the people who show up at Harbor Light, like, I honestly feel sometimes like you need a PhD to really be able to do the level of like support and healing that's really those people deserve and need, you mm-hmm. know? So it's an interesting phenomenon, but it I think it comes from more of a 12-step
approach
where it's, you know, you make it through the steps and then it's your counseling or doing therapy from your own life experience and your experience in recovery.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel like, how did you transition from that kind of work and that being your introduction to working to focusing on women and sexuality?
So, I mean, I still work there. Like I was working there today. So I haven't totally transitioned out of it. But
not that you should, just because I see that it's your focus.
One thing about Harbor Light is it's all men. And so there was a certain point where I was like, why am I working all with men?
Yeah.
I'm a woman. And so when I was doing some kind of like self-work, like what came up for me was maybe that I'm scared of working with women, and maybe that it's because I'm a woman and I have some internalized misogyny that I haven't looked at, that it feels safer to work with men because it's like a way of avoiding myself.
Yeah.
And so as soon as I like had that aha moment, I was like, oh, okay, well then I have to do the healing of getting good with my like femininity and also eventually work with women. And so that plus meeting my partner, who has been on his own sexual healing journey, really sent me on this like trajectory of body reclamation, of reclaiming my sexuality, of like getting to like come from and like love my pussy. Like, yeah, it really was that aha of being like, hold on a second, like, I'm not good with my own womanhood. And so I think it just started with, when I had that realization, somehow this book, I don't know if you read it, Pussy Reclamation by Regina.
No, sorry, repeat the name, I cut you off. Pussy?
Pussy, and then colon, subtitle, A Reclamation.
Yeah.
By Mama Gina. So that book just kind of landed into my lap somehow. I can't remember how I got it. And so I devoured that book, and I think it may be 20 years old, that book now, but it's about this woman's awakening of her own sexuality and, you know, living her life, you know, by asking her pussy, like, is this a good decision? Like, should we do it? And then she does it, and now she's created, like, you know, multi-million-dollar business, like, supporting women to live their life by their pussy.
I'm going to look into it, because it's rare nowadays that I come across books that I haven't even heard of, so that's amazing.
Look it up. It's a juicy read. So I read that and I was like, wow, like, that was very paradigm shifting. I've never really thought of, like, my body and my genitals like that before as this, like, power source.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think what happened next was I found Layla Martin, who is a YouTube tantra teacher, her sex coaching program. And it was really from this desire to do my own healing and to become, like, more integrated in my own sexuality that I just launched into this intensive 650-hour sex coaching program, which was a lot of tantra, a lot of sacred sexuality, Taoist sexual healing. Also worked with the teachings of Peter Levine, who developed a somatic experience, things with a lot of synchronicity there.
Yeah.
And it really just totally transformed my life. Like, tantra, wow. It was like, wow, I don't even know if I want to be a counselor anymore. I want to be a sex coach, and I want to work exclusively with women, and I want to teach tantra, and I want to teach breath work, and I want to show people these sacred sexuality tools.
That's funny. Do you feel now, like, because you said that it was also started by your partner, do you feel like prior to them or prior to that moment of realization, you didn't really focus on your sex life? Was that not that big a concern in your life?
Yeah, it was just something that I felt okay about my sex life. Like, I just hadn't really thought about it, you know? It was kind of like a stone that I hadn't really turned over. It was like, it was fine, you know? When it took me a long time to learn how to have an orgasm. I think I was in my 20s by the time I had my first orgasm.
Me too.
You know, and then it would always take me a long time to be able to orgasm with a partner. I was used to that. And, I think it was just, like, it was okay. But I think without really understanding it, I was just playing out a lot of kind of, like, patriarchal narratives. Like my job is to, like, look good and, like, make sounds. And I would be most turned on by my partner being turned on. But I was okay with all of that. It wasn't a super big deal.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, you know, I understood that there was this idea that, like, sex could be amazing, sex could be mind-blowing, and it could, you know, you could reach altered states of consciousness. And as someone who was always a meditator and a yogi and spiritual, I was intrigued by that concept.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't exactly know how to get from the kind of sex that I was having to that.
To that, Do you feel like you had it with your partner, what is their pronoun?
He's a him.
He's a he.
Yeah.
Do you feel like he showed you by actions, or showed you by telling you need to look into this, or, like, what was that process like?
So he, neither really. I mean, so when I met him, he had this book on mindfulness and sex, and I was kind of like, like, this is interesting, like, don't know why I didn't think to combine those two before. And so in some ways it was like, you know, wanting to hold space for him in his healing journey and just where he was at in his healing journey. A lot of those, like, tropes, like, that I had been, like, acting out in my sex life of, you know, like, feeling like sex was a performance, like, it didn't work in the context of our relationship. And just where he was at in his healing journey just necessitated that I show up in a more real and authentic way, which was really, not that I had known that I was showing up inauthentically in the past, but it just necessitated me to show up in a different way. And I was like, I have no script for this. So that motivated it a lot as well.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting way of putting it, because I put it that way too. And I think when you think of queer sexuality or non-monogamy, a lot of like making up your roles is necessitated by the lack of script. But when you are cis and straight, the script is there, and questioning it sometimes doesn't even come up, unfortunately. It's just those are the things that you do. And then when you do question the script, it's like, oh, okay, we're in a whole new world. The ground is not where I thought it was. And what now?
Oh, you froze.
Oh, no, you're back. We're back. Okay. So then you read the book and then you did that. And then what happens? How do you go from, are you just in your phase where you want to start working more only about those topics? Or have you been doing it? Like, what phase of that transition are you in?
So I would say I'm about a year and a half in.
Nice.
That transition. And so luckily, like, I'm kind of like an impulsive person. It's like, once I know that I want to do something, like, I do it. So it all happened very fast. Like, read the pussy book, like, met my partner, like, signed up for Layla's sex coaching program. Like, I just did it all, like, quite quickly. And so part of her program, it was this like year-long deep dive into tantra. And so that starts with 4 months of just your own personal tantric practice. So, and it was a pretty full on program. Like, the 5 days a week, you're doing these like 30 minute tantric practices, like, every day. So, which can vary from like different breathing practices, like to have energy orgasms, or it can look like screaming and like doing these primal rituals and like stomping and shaking and like crying around my apartment, or lots and lots of like self pleasure practices, like working with the wand, de-armoring my inside of my vagina, like my G-spot, my cervix, like learning how to circulate sexual energy throughout my body. And through all of this, starting to have those like altered states experiences that, you know, I'd always yearned for, but didn't really believe maybe were possible for me, or wasn't really sure if they were real. And so yeah, it's been beautiful.
I bet. I love how I have one of my really good friends and former guests on the podcast. Every time I talk to him about, he's now a certified tantric practitioner, but throughout the process, it's like everyone has that same glare when you start talking about it. It's like, just like empty happiness. Just like, I don't know how to phrase it. You'll just have to experience it. No, it's just like pure joy.
Yeah, just, you know, bliss and sexual energy. You're right, there's not really words of feeling. Yeah, but it's pretty epic. And so also starting working with the jade egg.
Something that
was a part of what I've been doing this last little while as well. And so that's also really created a whole new level of sensitivity and just familiarity with my sexual energy as well.
Do you want to explain to anyone who might be listening and doesn't know what a jade egg is?
Yeah. So most people know what a jade egg is because there's been some like controversy surrounding it. You know, I know Gwyneth Paltrow was told she had to take some health claims she had about the egg down from her website. She's selling them on Goop. And, you know, I've seen a study that said there's no benefits from it. But my intuition is that in this study, people were just putting an egg in and then like going to do their laundry, you know, or like going to the gym. And what I teach and have learned how to do is a more intentional activated practice where you're working with the egg for maybe 20 minutes, like, you know, 30 minutes, and then most of the time taking it out afterwards. And so it's a jade stone that you insert inside of your vagina. And so it's only for people who have vaginas. And it's from the Taoist tradition. So there's other Taoist practices for people who have penises that don't involve the jade egg. And so specifically the other kind of controversy surrounding it is, oh, could you get TSS? You know, what you get in those boxes of tampons, it always says warning. Like, you know, if you leave this in for too long, you could get toxic shock syndrome. So I think this is because now in stores you see like amethyst eggs and like rose quartz eggs and then clear quartz eggs, and those stones are a lot more porous than jade or obsidian, which are the two stones that were traditionally used in the Taoist tradition. And so there's more potential there for rose quartz or amethyst to harbor harmful bacteria. They're actually more prone to shattering as well. And so, yeah, you put that jade egg inside your vulva, and then there's practices you can do, like usually string it, the resistance practices, so you can build the strength of your vaginal muscles, which is directly correlated with the strength of your orgasm, because when you orgasm, your vagina maximally contracts. And so the stronger your pelvic floor muscles are, then the more powerful your orgasms can be. But also, it has more spiritual applications as well. Like, it's really used for sexual energy cultivation tools. So there's practices you can do to like release trauma, release the energy of past lovers with it. And also, because it's quite a small thing to be putting inside of your pussy, like, it's not always easy to feel right away. Mm-hmm. And so the other thing it does is it really wakes you up to sensation, because, you know, I know for myself, like, the inside of my vagina was a very underused place, and places that we don't use tend to fall asleep. And so where your attention goes, the nervous system follows. So using the jade egg really woke up like the inside of my vagina, and now I've started to be able to have cervical orgasms and just feel so much more.
Yeah. I think it's funny how people don't equate their genital feelings with other feelings in the rest of your body. Like, we're all very familiar with the fact that if you change your workout a little, or you do a thing that you don't usually do, and then you're like, holy shit, I'm feeling pain in something that I didn't even know I had. It's like, it was there all along. Like, it's the same for the rest of your body.
Yeah, I like, there's this woman, Kim Anami.
Yeah.
She gives this metaphor I've heard her say of how if you lived in a small village somewhere where people only use their left arm, then everyone in the village, like, your right arm would just be like floppy and deformed by your side. And then if one day some people came through the village who were using both their arms, you'd be like, oh my God, you can use both your arms? But you would try and move your right arm, but it wouldn't, you know, because you haven't been using it for very long.
Yeah.
And so it takes time. Like, this was my experience, at least. I had to kind of like rehab my vagina, you know, and coax it back into, and I still think that there's room for it to grow into, you know, being fully alive and energetically awake and full of sensation.
Yeah. And so what do your sessions look like now in those processes? Like, what do you want, what do you want from your ideal client or from you? What's your current aspiration in that regard?
Interesting question. What do I want from my client? Well, I mean, I guess what I want for them is for them to be able to relate to their sexuality and to their body and to their feminine energy in a whole new way, and for it to feel like a power source and something that is an asset. I guess that's what I want for them, because that's what's been so life-changing and paradigm-shifting in myself. And so I think the pathway through that, or at least the pathway that I took, was, you know, healing trauma, like releasing embodied trauma on a nervous system level, and looking at old beliefs and like thought patterns that were limiting around what it is to be a woman and to be sexual and what I deserve to have and worthiness. And so the work I am currently doing with women is on a couple different levels. Like I do kind of body-based trauma release work and also lots of like psycho-emotional processing, like inner child. I love inner child work so much. And I also teach JDEG and I teach vaginal dearmoring and I give them like homework. Like I create like a half hour guided MP3, and then it'll be me instructing them through the dearmoring or how to use the wand in their vagina. So they go home and they self-pleasure, and then we talk about it during our next session. And then also for some women who really want to work with the jade egg, I coach the jade egg live in session so they can like turn the camera away from themselves, and I just talk them through how to work with the jade egg during the session.
How do you feel? How would, okay, on a personal level, I want to ask, you don't have to answer, but how was your first session doing that as a person, not as a counselor? Like, how did you feel?
Nervous.
Yeah.
So it's been an arc with the JDAG. Because I think even before doing that, I'll backtrack. And my first time being in a room with other women when we were all working with the JDAG, like I went to this tantra retreat in Mexico that was part of Layla's program. And before the retreat, we had to sign a waiver. And the waiver said things like, I acknowledge that there'll be clothing optional areas. And I acknowledge that, I'm at choice. I don't have to do anything I don't want to. But like, I'm going to be in an environment where people are invited to like sexually stimulate themselves, like in the group room. And I was kind of like, oh God, what did I get myself into? Like, I remember saying those exact words on my boyfriend, like to my boyfriend, like I was like, I don't know if I can go. Like I'm shit scared of this. And then it just is the same with coaching. Like it's so not a big deal. Yeah. And so I don't think I was as nervous to coach a live JDEG session as I was to work with the JDEG like in
As
front
a
of people. Yeah, because that was the big unknown, was allowing myself to be that vulnerable. And then as soon as you're there, like of course, like good facilitator will warm you up to it in such a way that by the time you're putting a jade egg inside of your vagina in a group environment, you're just like, could be just taking a sip of water. Like this feels normal.
yeah.
And more than just it feeling normal, I actually think there's something so magical about the energy that's created when people get together and do these energetic sexual practices in a group. Like I think it's so much more potent than, if I'm just practicing in my bedroom at
Yeah,
home.
and I think that's I asked you because I think it's sort of a similar process to, and I think that's why it feels less weird to me to being in a just sexual group environment where you're like, if someone's never been to an orgy, it sounds extremely terrifying and so overwhelming, and then you find yourself hopefully in a healthy, warm, supportive, safe space where that is happening, and it literally is like eating an apple. It just starts to be just a thing that your body does.
Right. And then after being in Mexico with all women doing tantra, I remember the next edge was when my partner and I went to our first like co-ed like tantra event. And I remember still it felt like another like thing that I had to break through. And then just as you described, we went to one that had great, trauma-informed facilitation. And it just felt so natural to be there, like eating an apple, like breathing,
Yeah, it feels
breathing
like,
really fresh, crisp, nourishing air.
yeah, it's like what your body does. It's just a thing that it does. A wonderful thing that it does, but a thing that it does. Do you, is there a direction? Are you happy where you are with your practice in that section of your work? Or is there a sort of a next goal that you already have in mind?
Definitely. So I just want to this year transition out of my other work. And I think I'll always stay on there super part-time at the treatment center just because I have a love for it, just what a special place it is. But I want to really be supporting myself full-time off my women's sexuality coaching and trauma resolution practice. And I want to do group coaching. So right now I'm just working one-on-one. And so something that is in the works is, offering jade egg and sexual trauma healing in a group environment. And I think it's, and I actually am offering a small in-person version of this at the Dharma Temple in February, but I want to be able to offer it to my online community, people who aren't just based in Vancouver. Because, for so long I felt so alone with my trauma and my tendency, I was in flight response for a long time. My tendency was to isolate. And I think it's really hard to heal in isolation because trauma happens in relationships. So there's something so special about like coming together in community, like around the shared intention of healing. And so having those spaces live, but also I'm creating that space online as well, feels really
Yeah.
important to me.
That's what we were talking about with Julia on the last two episodes who introduced us. So thanks, Jules. but yeah, there is something about common group, and I mean common as in like currently experienced common energy that just we talked about it in the episode in the last episode we did with Julie and Joanne. It's like a going to a concert. Like it's that kind of. It's not the same as listening to the if you were by yourself and the band was playing for you, it wouldn't be the same. You need this energy and this vibration of just we're all in this together
Yeah,
kind of vibe.
absolutely. Yeah, and I think it just makes you feel like, in the concert example, it's like, yes, like other people are just as into this music as me. And in the context of healing, it's like, oh, I'm not the only person with this problem. Like other people feel like this, or sometimes not even knowing you have a problem, but then someone else expresses that they have a problem, and you're like, oh shit, I have that too, and I didn't even know it. You gave me words for my thing.
Yeah.
So.
No, and that's literally why I used the concert example, 'cause I remember going to an Adele concert super early in her career at the Orpheum, and it felt like group therapy 'cause we were all crying for an hour releasing all this stuff. And like when you walked into the concert and you walked out, the areas where we were all just standing, the energy was different. It just felt released. And I was like, interesting. And I just always keep that as like an involuntary or like maybe subconscious therapy session, massive group therapy session.
Back at like people of color, like in slave days and stuff, like how did people process their trauma and like sang and moved and like danced together? And I think movement and like sound, and especially like something about the energy of coming together as a collective and moving and sounding together, like that is how you process and integrate trauma, like
Yeah.
on a body level.
Yeah. All right, Sarah, we're coming to an end of this episode, and I'm about to ask you the guest's most hated question of all time. No pressure. What is a thing for parting words that you wish you heard more, that you wish you were told?
I wish I was told that female pleasure exists and that pleasure for the sake of pleasure is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And I wish I was told that life can feel good, that like you can do things in a way if you orient yourself to pleasure, where your business, your life, your day-to-day feels nourishing and spacious. Yeah, I guess I just learned, wish that I was introduced to pleasure. Pleasure is nourishment from a young age.
Yeah, that is not a thing that we were taught as a generation. It is not a thing that was on the radar whatsoever. I totally agree. And 100% is on the radar. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming to chat on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I loved this conversation with
I
you.
know, me too. I'm gonna post all of your links in the description. So if anyone listening wants to get a hold of Sarah, you know exactly how to do so. If and when the future events and continuations of your practice come on, I'll make sure to share them. Yeah, anything else that we might want to add?
Yeah, just that February 15th, my in-person in Vancouver JDAG Progressive is happening, and there's spots open. So if you want to just get started, come.
Click below and make sure you go there. February 15th. Well, thank you again for coming, Sarah, and talking.
Thank you for having me.
No worries. And thank you guys for, sorry. Thank you folks for listening. I keep doing this and I'm gonna keep fucking it up until I get it right. Thank you folks for listening again. This is just gonna keep being random conversations until you tell me about topics or people that you want to hear from. So I'm always open to suggestions. And until then, I will speak to you next week.